You're listening to Insight. I'm Pamela Wu in for Beth Ruyak. The new book, Bury What We Cannot Take, is set in the complicated and frightening early years of the Maoist regime. It's the second novel by Kirsten Chen, a native of Singapore who now lives in San Francisco. Praise for the book has been laudatory across the board, with critics calling it achingly beautiful, powerful, and captivating. Tonight, Bury What We Cannot Take is featured at Stories on Stage Sacramento, where actors perform works in literary fiction. Author Kirsten Chen joins us in the studio to discuss the new novel. Kirsten, welcome to Insight.
Thanks so much for having me.
How did you come up with the premise of the novel, Bury What We Cannot Take?
The premise for this novel was an absolute gift, and it's the only time this has ever happened to me. I actually went out to dinner with a very dear college friend of mine way back in 2010, and this was before I was even thinking about my second book because I was still working on my first novel. And he told me a story about his own family that was just unforgettable. And at the time, again, like I said, I wasn't working on a novel. But about 6 months later, when the time finally came to start thinking about my second book, that story just immediately came back to mind. And maybe I'd been thinking about it subconsciously for all those months. I know you've read the book, but his father, my friend's father, was the little boy who saw his grandmother hammer the portrait of Chairman Mao, and his aunt was the little girl who was left behind. And so it was just an unforgettable premise.
Now, for those who aren't familiar with it, who haven't read it, can you sort of summarize for us or just set the stage for us what it's about?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like I said, the novel is set in 1957 on a tiny island off the coast of southern China. And when the novel opens, a brother and a sister witness their grandmother defacing the portrait of Chairman Mao with a hammer. The family gets in trouble and has to flee very quickly to Hong Kong. But when the mother of the family goes to get the necessary exit permits, she's told to leave one of her children behind as proof of the family's intention to return.
Really, an incredibly, of course, difficult choice. What kind of research did you do to make the setting feel so authentic? It's so vibrant, and you really feel what the characters are feeling and what the environment is like.
Thank you so much. I did a lot of research. I read very broadly. I watched a lot of films. I took a couple trips to Gulangyu, or Drumwave Islet, which is the setting of the novel. And then I also very fortuitously had a close family member, an aunt, who knew that setting and the time period firsthand. And so the information that she was able to give me was really, really played an invaluable role.
Excerpts from the novel are going to be performed tonight at Stories on Stage Sacramento. We have a clip to preview the event. This is Sacramento State Theater student Justin Lee performing an opening passage from Kirsten Chen's new novel, Bury What We Cannot Take.
Her brother was pinching out the chocolate eclair from the pink pastry box when they heard the crash of shattering glass. Sansan's hands clapped over her ears as though compelled by some outside force. The eclair landed on the table with a soft splat. Mui Ah appeared in the kitchen doorway with Cook close behind her. "I'll go check," her brother said, pushing back his chair. "You stay here." Sansan pushed back her chair too. 12 years old to her 9, her brother was constantly forbidding her from going places with him and his friends. Sometimes when he was particularly grumpy, he made her follow several paces behind when they walked home from school. This time, however, she wouldn't let him bully her. She stood and squared her shoulders and he scowled, but said no more. They tiptoed out of the dining room, through the empty drawing room, and stopped before the study. The sliding door had been pulled almost shut, though not all the way. Inside the room, something thudded to the floor. Her brother held his finger over his lips, and Sansan pulled a face. What did he expect her to do? Burst into song? He planted himself before the sliver of space between door and wall, blocking her view. Her nose was running. Her grandma scolded her for always catching cold as if it were something she could control, and she wiped her nostrils on her sleeve so she wouldn't have to sniffle. She tugged on the back pocket of her brother's uniform trousers, and at last, he stepped aside. Sansan held back a gasp. On the opposite end of the room, Grandma knelt before the framed photo of Grandpa on the family altar, her face buried in her hands to muffle her sobs. And then Sansan noticed the shards of glass strewn about the dark walnut floor. The claw and long wooden handle of the hammer partially hidden by Grandma's skirt. Above Grandpa's portrait, in the very center of the wall, the chairman's gleaming face continued to preside over the room. smiling benevolently at all who gazed upon him, oblivious to the spiderweb of cracks that scarred him. Sansan's fingers brushed the door handle, and then she pulled back her hand. She turned to her brother, but his face was pale, his eyes clouded with worry. He dragged her back to the dining room. "You're hurting me," she said. When he let go, she saw that his fingertips had left red spots on her skin. She winced dramatically and massaged her forearm. "Sorry," he said quietly. Even though he no longer had to whisper, he leaned in close. "I need you, please, for once, to listen to me." Sansan stopped rubbing her arm. "You didn't see anything. Neither of us did. Is that clear?" Sansan nodded. "Nothing at all," she nodded again. "We came home from school, and they told us Grandma was resting in her room, and we had our afternoon tea as usual." "All right," Sansan said, annoyed. Moya came out with a broom and dustpan. "Does Grandma need help?" In unison, Sansan and her brother shouted, "No!" Moya narrowed her eyes. "Leave her alone," her brother said. "She'll call if she needs help."
That was Justin Lee, actor Justin Lee, performing a scene from Kirsten Chen's new novel, Bury What We Cannot Take. Author Kirsten Chen is with us in the studio right now. What was that like for you to hear that?
It's always such a pleasure to hear actors read your work. You know, I had the same experience when I listened to the audiobook. Writers can try very, very hard to work very hard at reading their own work, but we're just not professionals and we just don't give it the same flair that actors do.
You know what's striking to me listening to that? I mean, I was following along in my copy of the book. That's on like page 4 or 5. And so the event that sets the whole chain of events for the rest of the book into motion happens very early on. It's very striking. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to put that really pivotal scene right at the start?
I think it was clear from the very beginning that that had to happen right away. Because like you said, that is the one event that kind of sets in motion everything else. What I've learned from writing novels is you have to captivate the audience. You have to capture the audience from the beginning. Why save the sort of best moment to later in the book?
I picked it up. I started reading it, and by page 4 was, whoa, this is really happening. So mission accomplished. What lessons did you learn from working on your first novel, Soy Sauce for Beginners, that helped you with this one?
Oh, that's a good question. They're very, very different books because the first novel, Soy Sauce for Beginners, is set in contemporary Singapore, which is where I was born and raised, and so it really didn't require the same level of research. The protagonist is a young Singaporean woman who shares several surface-level characteristics with me, the author. And so for that reason as well, I didn't have to dig as deep to kind of find the emotional resonance of the book. But that being said, I did take away a lot of lessons. And I think the biggest one was just stamina. You know, it took me 6 years to write and publish that first book and countless revisions, at least 10 drafts. And so I think that I really built my work ethic through that time, and I really honed my writing process, and those are the things that I was able to carry into my second book.
Speaking of those lessons, in the acknowledgments, you thank the celebrated author Michael Chabon for a little writing tip that he included in one of his novels.
Yes.
What advice did you borrow from him?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, Michael Chabon. Wonderful writer, obviously.
Yes.
I think that one of the biggest challenges for this book, Bury What We Cannot Take, was the research. And doing enough research so that I felt that I had the authority to capture this very complicated time period and this distant setting that I didn't know firsthand. And so I think that I had a lot of insecurities going into writing the book. But when I read Michael Chabon's author's note of his wonderful novel, The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, I saw that he wrote this little, just this single sentence in his author's note that said, do you have the note, by the way, if you want to... I can read it exactly so that I don't butcher.
Yeah, well, let me hand over my
copy of
the book.
So that I don't butcher the quote because he says it so well. So this is the line that Michael Chabon writes. He says, "I have tried to respect history and geography wherever doing so served my purposes as a novelist, but wherever it did not, I have, cheerfully or with regret, ignored them." And that was such an incredibly freeing thing to read.
How liberating.
Exactly. But it was also a reminder that, you know, we're writing historical fiction. We're not writing historical history books. And there's it's kind of a different skill set and there's a different goal. At the end of the day, you have to be able to tell a good story.
What do you hope readers will come away with after reading Bury What We Cannot Take?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, I think, especially because of how our political climate has changed in the last couple of years and even in the last couple of months and weeks. And so, you know, this is a book about refugees. It's a book about the ways in which borders tear families apart. And I think that one of the really powerful things about fiction is that it allows a reader to go very, very deeply into a character's head. And I think it's a lot harder to just dismiss a group of people if you're able to really understand and even empathize with their personal experiences. And so I think that's one thing that I hope readers take away from the book, just being able to think about refugees in a deeper way than just sort of statistics and numbers.
It's very humanizing.
I hope so.
Kirsten Chan's new novel, Bury What We Cannot Take, will be performed tonight at Stories on Stage Sacramento. That's happening at the Sacramento Poetry Center in Midtown tonight at 7 o'clock. We have event and ticket information on our website at capradio.org/insight. Kirsten Chan, congratulations on the new book and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful.
That's Insight for today. I'm Pamela Wu in for Beth Ruyak. Insight is produced by Jen Picard, Bert Johnson, and Cody Drabble. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our theme music was composed by Joe Gilman and Paul Conley. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. We are back with another live show on Monday. Thank you for joining us.